end of the first hour last time before I started giving a sort of description of the two possible directions that I could take. So we had defined cross products, at least for discrete groups, and I had stated that the cross product was the universal, or the algebra associated with the universal covariant representation of the group and the action. But then there was a question of actually exhibiting some covariant representations. And I wrote down, I think the last thing I did was to write down the regular representations. And let me start by putting them up again. Alpha G on of A, this will be assumed throughout, and we will take G discrete and A unital to keep things simple. And by the time I get around to talking about the conditional expectation, I'll actually need at least the group to be discrete. I guess I should also say, the usual condition one puts on representations is they're supposed to be non-degenerate. I don't think this is really needed. It's certainly the development in Williams' book doesn't use this condition, but we might as well here. But since A is supposed to be unital, the representation is non-degenerate if and only if it's unital. So given a unital representation, pi 0, from A to L of H, H 0 I want, for some Hilbert space, H 0, we construct covariant representation V pi of G A alpha on H equals L2 of G with values in H 0. And the formulas are, I think I actually checked it was covariant last time, but at least I want to remind you of the formulas. The representation of the group is just the left regular representation, Vt of G, V of something, V of G, C, divided at H, is just C of G inverse H. So the elements in this thing here are thought of as functions. And pi of A T evaluated H is pi 0 of, as I twisted a moment, but of alpha, of C of H. And the twist was, what was it? It was alpha H inverse of A. So when you put this twist in here, then that actually makes it a covariant representation. So we checked last time. That this pair is covariant. I'm not going to go heavily into the distinction, but I want to use specifically regular representations for some purposes. And so to put this in the right context, we define the reduced cross product is the image, the closure of the image of, let's say either L1 of GA alpha or just the group ring part under the, I should probably say the universal regular representation, but I get that simply by taking the universal representation of A under the regular representation. And I should also say, really, the integrated form of it associated with the universal representation of A. And so in particular, is written C star R G A alpha. If A is the complex numbers and the action is trivial, then this is the reduced group C star algebra, which many of you have seen. It sometimes really is different. So, theorem, which I will not prove. Let me put up one thing here. So notice since it actually is some covariant representation, we get a homomorphism from the first C-star algebra to reduced C-star algebra. And since it has dense range, and since we're dealing with C-star algebras, it's actually surjective. So the theorem is that if G is amenable, then this map is an isomorphism. C star G A alpha goes to C star R. Okay, alpha is an isomorphism.
The regular
representation, so I want to take the, I want to start with pi zero up there being the universal representation of A. And then I form the regular representation of the pair GA alpha, or the triple GA alpha associated with that representation of A. And then I take the integrative form of that, which is a representation of L1 or the skew group ring or whatever. And I, yes. The universal representation of A, right? This is at least some representation of the C-star algebra, but not necessarily the universal one. But for G amenable, it might as well be. I'll implicitly prove that finite groups are amenable, or at least implicitly prove this for finite groups. The group of integers and finite groups are amenable. There are many more, of course. This is a very small collection of them, but those are the ones I'm actually interested in. I mean, we'll be using G as the main subject. These lectures. And I guess I won't go into the definition of amenable either. I want to try to do as much as I actually can toward the proof of classification theorem or the structure theorem. So, so now I want to. So far, I've not used either discrete or the group being discrete or the group or the alpha being universal. But at this point, now it becomes important that the group is discrete. So what I want is to produce and do some applications of what's known as a conditional expectation. And what it does is on the skew group ring, or on little L1, it simply picks out the coefficient of the identity element of the group. This is not a homomorphism, but it's an A bimodule map. I'll explain that a little bit more when I get to it. And it plays a key role in lots of arguments dealing with cross products by discrete groups. It's something which you don't have for a locally compact group because, right, you're looking at, for example, capital L1 of GA alpha. These are measurable functions. The value of the identity is not defined because the identity is a set of measures zero. to do this, I want to change my view of that Hilbert space up there. So I want to think of, so H0, pi 0, H as above for some representation, pi 0. So I want to think of H as the direct sum of the Hilbert space, direct sum over all the elements of the group of simply copies of H0. And when I do this, I then have isometries SG from H0 to H, and I suppose I should decorate them with the Hilbert space and so on, but I won't actually do that, would simply include H0 as the sum end index by G. Let me get this right now. This lemma 1, I'm simply going to calculate the regular representation. So, if pi 0, pi, v, h 0, etc., as above, and if sigma is the integrated form, well, I guess in this case I should say the summed form, since we're dealing with counting measures, then sigma of A, so this is 4, A is the sum over G in G, AG UG. Again, recall the convention that I want to label things by unitaries, and with, well, the sum of the norm of the AG finite, put that here, C of H. So C is in the Hilbert space capital H, which is the O2 functions. I won't quite do this yet, but in any case, what the formula comes out to be is the sum over G and G of pi 0 of alpha H inverse of AG of C of G inverse H. So just remember that this is really, so proof, I'll put in quotation marks, right, sigma of A is really just the sum over G in G of pi of AG V of G. Right, we simply apply the algebra representation to the algebra elements and the group representation to the group elements and multiply them together and add them up in the same order in which they're written in, where is it, there. And then you simply use the formulas for them up there to figure out what this does to some t. And I guess exercise actually carry it out. Easy exercise. Compute this. Compute this to finish the proof. And I'll claim that I've ended the proof here. Okay, so the next thing to do is to prove. Now I'll use these things FG, which I introduced. For using the notation above, so pi 0, etc. Assume that pi 0 is injective. So one of the things we're going to find out when we do this is that I didn't have to use the universal representation here. All I needed is some injective representation. Actually, even that is overkill, but it will do for present purposes. So on, say, bracket G or, or L1 of G A alpha, I want to write down several norms. Right, norm for the seafarer norm, norm R for the norm in reduced seafarer algebra, norm 1 for the little L1 norm, and norm infinity equals the sloop of A equals the sloop over G and G of the norm of A sub G when A is the sum of A G U G. Okay, so again, the claim is the norm A infinity less than or equal to norm A R less than or equal to norm A less than or equal to norm A 1. Yes?
Is the first one the norm just plain A or the norm in the full cross product?
So I take an element of, I might as well be here, I put it in the full cross product and I take the norm there. For the C star norm.
Right,
well, let me put for the norm in C star of G A alpha. Yes?
We don't believe anything about pi naught.
It's injective. For this part, let's see. No, I'm going to be sorry. I'm going to use that in the proof. Sorry, that should have been in part of the proof. So, just put this down here. Sorry. This is not how I want to square. Oh, I see what happened. I skipped from one limit to another. but I don't actually want to use pi zero injective there either. I skipped something by mistake. Let me back up. So corollary to lemma 1. So using the notation S sub T here, so again using notation above, and this is sort of this calculation is actually the key point. One has that for A, the sum over G and G, A, G, U, G, and H and K in G. So I have these inclusions of these various summands here. So I take S, H, star, sigma of A. So sigma is, again, the integrated form of the representation. S, K. So this now... I take something in H0, I stick it in H as the K summand. I move it around by the integrated form of the representation, and I look at the H coordinate of that. That's what this thing actually does. And that's some sort of operator from H0 to H0, and this is what it is. It's pi 0 of alpha H inverse of A H K inverse. So, I mean, you can see from the structure of things that some formula sort of this nature has to be true. I mean, when I look at what sigma of A does, there's only one of the terms here which gives something which takes things in the H summand and moves them to the K summand. And that's the one, which takes things in the K summand and moves them to the H summand. And that's the one for U sub H K inverse. So, proof. Again, you calculate. Okay. I'll go back up here, and I guess I'll go not from here, but over to the beginning board. We'll see through the proof that, in fact, I should really, I suppose, use the universal representation of A up there, but we'll see in the proof that, in fact, the norm that I actually get doesn't matter as long as I use any injective representation. So for the proof of lemma 2, continued. So a couple of them we've done already, right? The first two inequalities we've actually done already. Not the first two. The last two inequalities already done. And so for the first one, I need to show that the norm of A sub G is less than or equal to the norm A R for any G in G. And here, where here A is again the sum over G and G of A, G, G. What I basically do is I simply take, I use this corollary here. So in fact, we get get the norm of sigma of A is less than or equal to the norm of A R, because that's a representation of the reduced C-site algebra. And the norm, A H K inverse is equal to the norm of pi 0 of alpha H inverse of A H K inverse. The alpha is an automorphism, doesn't change the norm. Pi 0 is injective, it doesn't change the norm. And this is equal to the norm of sigma, sigma H star, F H star sigma of A, SK. And that's obviously less than or equal to the norm of sigma of A, less than or equal to the norm of A. Mark. Because the S's have norm 1. Did I get the notation right here? I missed one thing. Yes, I0. Yeah, I got everything right. So I simply take HK such that G is equal to HK inverse. And I'll get that. So now then, lots of corollaries. We can see exactly why. So corollary, if G is finite, this implies that C star, whatever to C star R, is an isomorphism. This is said by finite is, of course, gross overkill here, but since we've actually got the machine to show that right away, let me actually do it. And the proof is the norm, norms of 1 and norm infinity on A bracket G are equivalent. Right, so in particular, those two norms are equivalent, and if two C-star norms are equivalent, they're equal. This was called corollary 1. Corollary 2. If I send A mapping to A times U sub 1, so this is from A to C star of G A alpha, or A to C star reduced of G A alpha. And I'm not going to specify in the notation whether I mean this to be in the full or reduced cross product. It should be clear from the context. But in this case, it could be either of them. This map is injective. Well, I mean, proof. I mean, so no, it is a star homomorphism. And also note that the norm of AU1 sub infinity is equal to the norm of AU1 sub 1 equals the norm of A. So that's isometric. And that's for both the full and reduced cross products, right? I mean, so in particular, we can identify A as a subalgebra of the cross product. And often will identify A as a subalgebra of C star R of G A alpha, or C star algebra. Right, you surely hope that the map from A into the cross product is injective. Then, until you have enough representations, you don't know that it's true. So, corollary 3. The map E sub G, which sends, say, L1 of G A alpha to A by EG of the sum over H of A G A H U H equals A G. In other words, that's the G coefficient map is continuous, in fact, norm reducing from the C set algebra GA alpha to A and C star reduced. So for the proof of that, well, the norm EG of A is less than or equal to norm A infinity. Right, it's the norm of one of the coefficients, so it's less than or equal to the maximums of all the coefficients. So this is the coefficient map. And the other thing that I should add to this, which I forgot to put in the rest of the statement, where do I want to put it? Let me see here. So the other point to also note that for any regular representation, sigma integrated form of V pi from pi 0, we have so I had a formula. I guess it's been erased. For what this reduced an element, a sigma of something or other, to an element in the an operator in H0 by choosing two coordinate things. And that formula was given for elements of L1 of GA alpha, but in fact it's true for anything in the C-star algebra. Of course, now you have to worry about what the coefficient means because it's just some sort of completion. Well, the coefficients make sense because we just show this map EG is continuous and therefore extends continuously to the C-star algebras. And so what we get is that SH star sigma of A SK is pi 0 of alpha H inverse of E. And now I had a sub HK inverse, HK inverse of A, and here I have before this AHK inverse, and I need another parenthesis there for all A in C star of GA alpha. And again, I'm sort of confusing the notation. I'm using the same letter for representation of the full and the reduced cross product. But given that abusive notation, I can say that it's like this in the proof. So extend from L1 of G and alpha by continuity. We know it's true in a dense set, and both sides are continuous on the C-star algebra. So another corollary that's certainly nice to have. This one, by the way, actually does not need discreteness, but I can prove it easily here, and that is that L1 of GA alpha to the reduced C-star algebra is injective. And so the proof, so let A be in L1 GA alpha. Suppose that the image let me give this map a name, C, so it's C of A is 0. Then EG of A, well, I should say P of A here, is 0 for all G and G, but this thing here is just A sub G. So again, you certainly hope this would be true. And as I say, I mean, it's actually true much more generally, but you have to work harder. So perhaps I should arrange these corollaries in a slightly different order. Anyway, corollary 5. If A is in the reduced Eiffel algebra, and E sub G of A is 0 for all G in G, then A is 0. So in other words, if all the coordinates are 0, the original thing was 0, but this is not true for the full Eiffel algebra. Except when C star G A alpha to C star R is an isomorphism.
Is there a simple example of that?
The full Eiffel algebra of the free group on two generators. But how to actually write down write it down concretely?
You could write down the coordinates.
Yeah. I mean, it's it requires, I think, some work to actually prove these things. But anyway, you can certainly see that if this math is not an isomorphism, then this actually has to fail because anything in the kernel will have all the coordinates 0. Okay, the roof. Well, if EG of A is 0, oh, I should have said let pi 0 be any injective representation. And the fact that I could use any injective representation here will also show, by the way, that when I take the regular representation, I didn't need to use the universal representation of the group. So of A, pi, d pi, the regular representation, and sigma, the integrated form. So we assume EG of A is 0 for all G in G. But then, for all h and k in G, you take f, here I have it, h star, sigma of a, sk. Well, this is equal to pi 0 of e, h inverse k, and I forgot the alpha h inverse, e h inverse k. HK inverse of F. Gotta go around here, sorry. Then it's getting to be a 0, which is a 0. Well, but then. but for any t in L of little L2 of GHL, if S H star S K is zero for all S and H and K, but these things are just the matrix entries. B, when thought of as a matrix with entry is indexed by G cross G, and we elevate zero, then is zero. If all the matrix entries are zero, then the thing is zero. So we conclude that there's the end of the proof. So note the proof says that if pi 0 is any injective representation of A, and sigma associated regular representation. I guess I'm sort of using terminology here. C star R of G A alpha and sigma of A is zero. Then A is zero. That E G of A for all and G, thus sigma is. So when we make representations, we want injective one, we just have to choose the injective representation of the original L, not need to use the full representation. This, by the way, is also true for not necessarily groups, but I'm not going to attempt to prove anything like that here. Okay, I tried that label as corollary 6. Corollary 6. And so then corollary 7. And I just give lots of corollaries. And this is sort of now one of the keys. I mean, I define it using the
universal overall representation of A.
Universal representation of A. I think I got the logic slightly mixed up here. What I really should have said is that you have this corollary 5, if EG of A is G, then A is 0. Take any, the regular representation from any representation, you take an A and reduce it. You suppose the sigma of it is zero. Well, then this calculation, wherever it is, shows you that E, H, K, A is zero for all H and K. So all the EGs vanish on A, and therefore A is zero. Therefore the original representation was zero. So I got this slightly mixed up. I'm quite happy.
I'm not quite sure how it's...
Okay, well... rewrite it then. Let me redo this. So let me write it like this. Corollary 6. If pi 0 is injective, the sigma is injective. Usually notation. So, star, 0 is SH star, sigma of A, SK, which is pi of alpha H inverse of E H inverse of A, full H and G. So, injective, but E, G, and A, the zero for all G in the ground. And because they're always sit here, therefore, by corollary 5. Sorry, I got that sort of mixed. Go to the board. My voice coming through the microphone. They want to make a recording, apparently.